Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Stephen Harvin, registration number 39020, representing Ms. Kimberly Hess. Today, I plan on discussing the second issue raised in Ms. Hess's briefs, that is, issue concerning the deprivation of her right to counsel. I do not plan on directly addressing the other issues. However, if this court has any questions regarding those issues, I'll be happy to take those questions. The trial court deprived Ms. Hess of her right to counsel at a critical stage that clearly affected the outcome of trial. The trial court deprived Ms. Hess of her right to counsel through the following. When the jury contacted the court, indicating that it wanted to view the surveillance footage, the trial court failed to make any effort to contact defense counsel. The court failed to make this effort despite the fact that it had an obligation under the Constitution to do so. The jury then watched the surveillance footage through a different technological medium that presented images much clearer than those shown at trial.
Charvin, wasn't it the same medium? It was a digital video disc, and that video disc was the exact same disc that was played at trial. Isn't that correct?
The disc was the same disc that was played at trial.
So the media was the same. The question that you raised is that there was a different means of viewing that media.
I suppose that is correct, Your Honor. That's correct. When the disc was viewed at trial, it was played through a computer, which presented blurry and undefined images, whereas during deliberations, it was played through a DVD player attached to a TV, through which it presented much clearer images.
Mr. Marvin, was there any indication in the record that it was going to be played on a different apparatus than it was played at during trial? If counsel had been present when the jury asked to see the video, the DVD, is there any indication in the record that it was going to be played on a different apparatus?
The record is unclear as to whether or not the court expressed to the jury that it'd be played through a different type of technology. There is no indication at trial that the disc might be played through a different type of technology in deliberations.
So I'm wondering if counsel had been present at that conference, what difference it could have made if there was no mention made that it was going to be played on a different apparatus.
Well, quite frankly, Your Honor, we don't know what transpired between the court and the jury in deliberations because of the trial court's failure to contact defense counsel. The trial court, after deliberations, did not make a thorough record regarding what had transpired between him and the jury.
But to follow up on my once before. Safe to us. All they would have been, wouldn't that have been the only issue in front of the judge, something that the judge had already ruled on?
Well, I think the issue of the disc being played through different type of technology would have come up during any interaction between defense counsel and the trial judge, if the trial judge had contacted defense counsel. Of course, that's assuming that the trial judge would have notified defense counsel that he intended to play the DVD on a different type of technology. And the reason I think that trial counsel would have objected, or at least have been concerned about the DVD being played on a different type of technology, is because trial counsel was concerned before the trial even began that there might be a better version of the surveillance footage out there. Trial counsel contacted the prosecutor before trial and asked if there is a better means of viewing the footage. Trial counsel also asked during trial that the prosecutor stipulate that there is no better means of viewing the footage out there. So I think it's reasonable to assume that the trial counsel would have been concerned about the DVD being played through a different type of technology.
Did he ask whether there was a better means of viewing it, or did he ask if there was a better version of it?
My My understanding from the record is that he asked if there was a better, before trial, during discovery, the trial counsel asked the prosecutor if there was a better means of viewing the disc, because when he was playing it on his computer, it was blurry and undefined.
Why didn't he try to figure out if there was a better means of viewing it?
I believe because the prosecutor told him there was not.
Oh, he had the disc, and he had available to him, I presume, different methods of viewing the disc. Why didn't he try something else out?
That is true, Your Honor. I can only speculate that the defense counsel assumed that the prosecutor was correct, that there is no better means of viewing the disc, and therefore did not try any other means. I would also point out, concerning your questions regarding whether the court discussed with the jury or would have discussed with the jury whether the disc be played through a different type of technology, I think the lack of record on that matter arises from the court's error in failing to contact defense counsel, and I don't think that should be held against the defendant in this case. Our Supreme Court actually dealt with a similar issue recently in DeBell v. People.
Sorry, say that again, counsel, please.
DeBell v. People.
DeBell.
A case issued in, an opinion issued in June of this year. The court stated, "Were holes in the record of the result of the trial court's error, and pertinent inquiries on appeal are reduced to exercises and speculation, the lack of record support should not weigh against the defendant's interests." And I would submit that in this case, that's exactly what happened. The trial court failed to contact defense counsel, and any lack of record should not weigh against Ms. Hess's interests in this case.
So assuming we agree with you that there was error for not including counsel, why isn't it harmless in this case?
Because if trial counsel had been present, the outcome of the case might have been different, and let me explain why. If trial counsel had been present, as I've mentioned earlier, he might have asked to inspect the footage. He might have asked to inspect the footage to see how it appeared when it was played through a DVD player on a television. He might have simply objected to the footage being played through a different technological medium. And upon seeing that the footage appeared different, raised an objection, precluding the jury from viewing the footage in the different technological medium. Defense counsel also might have been concerned that the jury would freeze the footage at certain points, might have been concerned that the jury would play the footage over and over repetitively. So defense counsel might have asked to view the footage in open court, and upon seeing that the footage appeared clear, at that point, defense counsel could have objected that the footage was presenting what were effectively different images than those shown at trial. And I would just like to just talk about a little bit about the prejudice that I think is obvious from the trial court's own findings. The trial court stated that after viewing the footage on the DVD player in jury deliberations through this different technological medium, the jury remarked that the footage images appeared much clearer than at trial. The jury also wondered why at trial the DA hadn't played it for them on the TV as opposed to the computer screen. It wasn't long after the jury had watched the footage in deliberations that the jury returned with a guilty verdict. The trial court itself characterized the footage as shown in jury deliberations as better evidence than was shown in the courtroom. The trial court also acknowledged that the resolution of the footage may have been better when the jury viewed the footage in deliberations through a different technological medium.
Assuming that they had not seen it on a clearer medium in their deliberations, wasn't there nevertheless sufficient evidence to convict the defendant in any case? Couldn't they have taken the evidence that came in at trial in addition to the fuzzier video and convicted sufficiently on that basis?
Well, no, Your Honor. And of course, the test is whether or not the trial court's error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. So the question is whether or not there is overwhelming evidence of Ms. Hess's guilt arising from the evidence at trial. And I don't think we have that here. The defense counsel premised its entire case on the notion that the footage did not show what the prosecutor claimed it showed. This was buttressed by the trial court statement after defense counsel moved for judgment of acquittal that the footage was not very clear, that it was hard to identify faces and identifications. One of the prosecution's own witnesses did not identify Ms. Hess in the footage at trial, when she viewed it at trial, nor was she able to make out images of Ms. Hess taking any checks. And I think the fact that this footage, as it was viewed in deliberations, factored into the jury's verdict is apparent from the fact that the jury requested to see the footage in deliberations in the first place. I think if the evidence was truly overwhelming, the jury would not have requested to see the footage in deliberations. It simply would have convicted Ms. Hess on the evidence that it had seen at trial. If this court has no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Charvin, you have 3 minutes, 45 seconds.
Thank you.
Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Jennifer L. Ward. My number is 38342, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado in this action. I'm not going to belabor the facts of this case this morning because, as the court said, you've read the briefs, and I think opposing counsel and I set those facts out well in the briefs. What I will say is, and it's a brief quote from the record, from the hearing on November 5th of 2007, pages 17 through 19, it was there. And that's the trial court saying the images of Ms. Hess stealing the checks were there when they were played in the courtroom on the regular TV, I'm sorry, on the computer. They were there. You could see it. And this is the same tape that was later played on the DVD player. But it was there in the courtroom. The images were there. Now, my opposing counsel focused on the right to be present. And as I stated in my briefs, there is a right to be present at all critical stages during trial. In this case, though, Ms. Hess's presence or her attorney's presence would have made an insufficient difference in what happened at trial.
Let me ask you this. Isn't it constitutional error for counsel to not be made aware of a jury question?
Here in Colorado, we have a law that says that when the result would have been negligible, that it's not error. It's not reversible error.
But it is constitutional error, but then you move on to determine whether it's harmless.
Yes, okay. Sir.
Okay, so under the Leonardo decision, for instance, it would be constitutional error to have not included the counsel in that jury question. Would you agree with that?
Yes, but it's harmless.
All right, error. So you would move on to a harmless analysis.
Yes, sir.
Okay,
go ahead. In this case, it's harmless because one, the evidence was cumulative to what was played for the jury, and two, all of the defense counsel's objections and concerns were already on the record. Again, it was there on the record that counsel insisted, this is volume 2, page 217, defense counsel insisted that Exhibit 15 be admitted and wanted the jury to see Exhibit 15 because he believed there was exculpatory evidence in Exhibit 15. When Ms. Hess left, he argued that the next customer could have stolen the checks.
Isn't it reasonable, Ms. Ward, to, as Mr. Arvin suggests, to assume that in light of defense counsel's concern over the quality of the images and in light of the defense posturing that you couldn't see exactly his defendant taking any checks, that defense counsel, had they been notified that the jury had requested an opportunity to review this, would have been there, would have lodged objections, if appropriate, and out of an abundance of caution, would have reviewed the tape again to see exactly what how it was going to be played.
I don't think so, Your Honor. A review of the record, it's very clear in the record that defense counsel wanted that exhibit in, wanted it played, just wanted it there. So I don't really believe he would have objected to having it played a second time. I think he would have encouraged it to be played a second time because he truly believed that it didn't, when it was played in the courtroom, that it didn't show anything. And he felt very confident based on that one witness who said that she was having trouble viewing it in the courtroom. He felt very confident, I'm sure, and would have wanted it played again. The other witness who testified, Ms. Greer, testified that she saw it perfectly fine in the courtroom and that you could see the images clearly. So I don't think, knowing that you could see the images in the courtroom, on the computer monitor, and the fact that he felt it was exculpatory, I don't really think he would have objected. He wanted it played. He insisted it be played over and over again. And he made no objection to its playing. And the trial court even says, volume 2, page 21, that's why I'll let it be available to be shown to the jury. He knew it was going to be available to the jury, and he didn't have any objections at that point, nor did he raise, well, how will we play this again? Well, do we play it back on the computer again? He had no objections, so I don't believe that he would have objected.
What if he assumed it was going to be played on the computer again? Justifiably assumed that it would be played that way?
I would say that's counsel's error, but it's not extraneous information, or it's not harmless. It's harmless beyond a reasonable doubt still, because it was cumulative. It was played twice in slow motion, so I don't think that that's really determinative. Very briefly, opposing counsel raised the recent decision in DiBella versus People from the Supreme Court of Colorado. We didn't discuss this case in our briefs because obviously it hadn't been released at the time that opposing counsel and I filed our briefs. But I would just distinguish that case very briefly in that case, in DiBella, what happened was that the judge said, I have no control over this exhibit, this forensic interview of a sex assault victim, a child sex assault victim. I have no control over it. It goes back and the jury can do what it wants with it. That's a different factual basis than what we have here. And in fact, the Colorado Supreme Court found it was an abuse of discretion not to control the exhibit. In this case, the judge did control the exhibit. The exhibit wasn't given to the jury until they requested it, and then they came back with their decision very shortly thereafter. Unlike DiBella, where the jury was in deliberations for hours, and there was speculation that the jury could have watched the video many, many times. Additionally, as another distinguishing fact, in DiBella, it was a forensic interview. That's the victim telling their story over and over and over again. In this case, this is surveillance video. There's no narration. This is just black and white video of people coming in and people going out and people doing certain actions. But there's no telling of the story over and over in the victim's voice. Unless this court has any other questions, I'll rest on the briefs.
Thank you, Ms. Ward.
Thank you.
The state suggests that Ms. Hess's attorney waived any error that might have occurred because he asked that the jury see a version of the surveillance footage. I would again refer this court to DiBella v. People. In DiBella, a video was admitted that, as opposing counsel stated, showed a child witness's statements. During trial, defense counsel in DiBella used those statements to try and undermine that witness's credibility by showing that they conflicted with her trial testimony. In that case, the Supreme Court rejected the argument that defense counsel had waived an error by using the child's statements in the video. The Supreme Court stated that the defense attorney's decision to argue evidence admitted over his objection should not operate as a concession to its later use. Similarly here, defense counsel initially objected to the admission of the surveillance footage at all. Defense counsel later asked that a version of the surveillance footage be presented to the jury, but in doing so stated that the defense counsel maintained his objections. Defense counsel never stated that he wanted the jury to view the footage in deliberations, or that he was okay with that during trial. So I don't think that defense counsel waived the error here through his actions at trial. And most importantly, most fundamentally, defense counsel had no way of knowing that the footage would be shown through a different technological medium when it was viewed in deliberations. Even assuming that defense counsel wanted the jury to view the footage at trial, he had no reason to believe that it would be shown in a way that effectively produced different images. I would also note that, and I invite the court to review the record to determine this, but my review of the record does not show that Greer clearly stated at trial that she could see the images, that she could see Mrs. Hess taking checks in the images as they were shown at trial. Greer did say that she could see, that she had seen the surveillance footage and had seen Mrs. Hess taking checks, but it's unclear from her testimony whether she was referring to the surveillance footage as when she viewed it at the bank or as when she viewed it at trial. If this court has no further questions, I would ask this court to reverse Ms. Hess's conviction.
Mr. Irvin.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Ms. Ward. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.